You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome back to the Big A Strong Leicester Boys podcast. Thank you so much for listening. And yeah, how about that then? 4-2 win at Aston Villa at the weekend. And I mean, we've had some good fun and some good results in recent times. And look, it's not up there in terms of, you know, massively important. But my word, it was much, much needed. Really enjoyed that game. Can't wait to talk about it. And delighted to say that this week, after missing last week's episode because he was travelling out to Australia, we are joined by Jack Holmes. So Jack, coming live from Australia and with a hat. Good day, yeah. Mate. How are you, pal?
Good day. Yeah, I'm good. It's 6 a.m. here. My hat's falling off. I don't think it's going to stay on for the whole show. I just put it on for the intro. But that's a Bunnings Warehouse hat, which apparently is a famous thing in Australia. Keeps you sun safe and all that. So yeah. But was a bit gutted to miss out last week. I did enjoy listening. I was staying at a hotel and I could get YouTube on a treadmill. So I actually listened to all of you lot whilst having a run on a treadmill, which was quite the experience, particularly when after about the fifth time of the Who Are You intro theme tune playing, it really got me going and I got a decent time. But no, delighted to be back. It's, as I say, it's 6 a.m. here. I'm sat out by the pool because my nephew has commandeered the living room to watch Octonauts or something. So if there's a bit of background noise or a few birds in the background, that's because they're there.
Thank you for raising that. I was going to apologise. So for anyone, well, for the many people that did mention the fact that Who Are You was on repeat for around 15 minutes for the end of last week's episode, I'm not sure what happened. I will endeavour for that not to happen again. But congratulations if you did manage to make it all the way through that last 15 minutes of that just on repeat, slowly underneath. I'm not sure if I'm just going deaf or if there's some major technical problem. But Jack, of course, with you being in Australia, can you just let people know what the time zones and situation was for you to watch the game on Saturday to show that real level of commitment?
Well, when I say real level of commitment, I was very... very nervous about the game yesterday for many reasons. As Rick knows, I have an irrational hatred of Aston Villa, which I'm not really sure is explained by anything other than I have to spend a lot of time in Birmingham. So I was very nervous about the game. So I did try and sleep through it. But after going to bed at like 10, I think I woke up seven times between then and about 1:15. I woke up, it was 1-1. I then tried to go back to sleep. It was then 2-2, at which point I said, right, I'm going to go down and watch it. So I was up at 1:30, 1:40 to watch it. Watched the whole game. Obviously was very, very excited. And then at that point, couldn't get back to sleep. So I think I did a solid 20 hours awake yesterday, which with two kids under six running around was quite taxing. But the result kept me going for quite a long time.
Yeah, got a special guest joining us on the podcast this week, who I'm going to get to in a couple of moments' time. But before that, we have a new wrestler theme tune. And this is, of course, because we're about to welcome Ric Flair to the show. But first of all, Rick, this is what we've got for you this morning.
what The Rock is cooking.
Welcome to Ric Flair. That, of course, being The Rock, his theme tune, his entrance. Rick, we mentioned last week your love for Tete and your excitement when he did sign and the journey that you went through. I mean, that performance was everything that you've been telling us he's all about on Saturday, wasn't it? How much did not only that game, but in particular, the performance of Tete, how much did you enjoy that Saturday?
It was, well, it didn't surprise me. Let's be honest. That's what he does. But I was relieved because I have gone a bit over the top about him. But that's because he is that good and we needed him. I mean, it's what he brings to us. He's just going to, it's just everything. So, yeah, I mean, my phone's just gone wild the last 24 hours or more. It was almost as if my own son had made his debut, which I'm pretty impressed because he's only 6 years old. But it was a fantastic performance. And he delivered, didn't he? And even Harvey Barnes as well. Look at how good he was yesterday. Two assists, arguably the one for Pratt. It was just, yeah, made up. And that's only a 6-7 out of 10 performance with Tete. You wait.
So look, I'm going to enjoy this episode. It's so much better when we win a game of football, isn't it? It makes things so much more fun and easier. Right, let's get to our guest. Leaving waiting for long enough. Everyone knows who this man is. Everyone knows his voice. It's the one and only Ian Stringer. Ian, hello and welcome to the Big Strong Leicester Boys podcast, mate. Thank you for joining us.
No, pleasure. Thanks for having me, Jake.
So look, you've done these games and shows for many, many years, right? Try kind of explain how difficult it can be doing those shows and those commentaries week in, week out when things aren't going very well. It's difficult, isn't it?
Do you know, I apologise, but I'm going to disagree because...
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't find it hard at all. I found the disconnecting from the club as a fan actually quite easy because professional pride kind of took over and takes over. And I found it easy that way. I found it easy the kind of adversity way. And I found it relatively easy the winning way as well. So it was okay. I think the hardest thing as a broadcaster for me was the social media bomb that went off. And it's dealing with that, you know, not convincing yourself that the loud voice of a majority represent the majority, because they don't.
No.
The hard bit's when your kids are Leicester fans as well. So when you're a parent, you force them to be Leicester fans, and then, you know, you come home and they're more gutted that City have lost than you. But I've been able to find my love for the club again since not covering them week in, week out. And that's been a joy at times. And I'm really, really pleased that they managed to beat Aston Villa. I'm really pleased for Brendan, who's somebody I've got a lot of time for.
Yeah. So, look, I mean, so much to talk about that game on Saturday. But before we do, Ian, you know, on yourself, obviously, there has been a big change, you know, in your life, you know, for many years. You know, people did hear you on BBC Radio Leicester doing all the commentary. So what is that now like going back to Leicester? Obviously, you're still very much working in the media, but not doing Leicester week in, week out. What is that like now? You just said being able to kind of, you know, enjoy it. Is it a different kind of enjoyment and experience now going as a fan?
Yeah, it is. It is. And it's taken a while to get back into because the way in which the divorce happened has been and continues to be quite messy. But to go back with my kids, in particular with my daughter, who's the biggest Leicester City yov you've ever seen, by the way. We had a conversation about 6 months ago. She was saying to me, and she still calls me Daddy, bless her. She's like, Daddy, am I allowed to swear at the football? I said, sweetheart, going to learn some fruity language. The football is where you start. And the first swear word I ever heard leave her mouth was an away goal kick. And she's looked at me and started, ooh. And I'm like, I'm actually quite proud.
Yeah.
Quite proud. So it's been nice to go back as a fan and see that. and experience games and some of the love is able to come back, and that's been wonderful. I covered the Leicester Brighton game for Talk Sport. It was nice to see Brendan in the press conference and the build up and see a lot of people there on a match day. It was nice to exercise that ghost, as it were, and think that was game 695. Leicester City game 695. It's good. Talk Sport's great, love it. I know clearly you've plenty of experience there and doing other things in other places. So yeah, I'm resurfacing and I might enjoy Leicester City a little bit more.
Yeah, well, look, mate, it's great to have you on the podcast, and it's great to have you still very much involved in media. And as you said, you know, working now at TalkSport and various other places. So great to see. Let's talk about the game then on Saturday. 4-2 win, going down twice. You know, we've mentioned it a number of times, haven't we, that Leicester, how many times we've failed to either get over the line. The amount of times the stat is that we haven't won a single game in which we've conceded a goal in. Until, of course, on Saturday. So the mentality and the spirit, I think, that we showed throughout. I mean, I won't lie, when we conceded that first goal, Jack, I thought, oh God, here we go. And I was really nervous at that point. I'm thinking, you take a point. But then we bounced back immediately. Now, don't get me wrong, Aston Villa gifted us a couple of goals, didn't they? Is it the fourth and the first is pretty horrendous defending by them, but. On the whole, Jack, I thought, particularly as an attacking threat, that quartet of Madison, Tete, Barnes, and Kelechi Iheanacho, I thought they were outstanding and mouthwatering in many ways at the prospect of those four playing again. I really, really enjoyed that game.
Yeah, I think we definitely look way more of a threat going forward. I think what you say on the first goal, yeah, it's a mistake by them, but we forced them into a mistake which seemed very deliberate. And I think going forward we just had so much more about us, in even in the second half when we run to the cosh a little bit. We'll talk about Tete a lot, but even Christiansen gives us an outlet because he carries the ball up the pitch, and the team just looked so much stronger. I was really pleased personally, because I've banged on that this team needs new players for a long time, and I know Brendan said the same, and I know a lot of us on the podcast have said the same, but it really showed, because you know, even in the Brighton game we had one outlet which was get the ball to Madison really, but Tete, just his touch is phenomenal. There was one point from a corner which absolutely it almost cost us a goal actually, but he the ball comes out and he nutmegs the player. It doesn't quite come off, but just having a player like that in the team that can go past players makes such a difference. Christensen's my new favourite player. I absolutely love him. He does look like a professional footballer physically. His face doesn't look like a professional footballer. He looked knackered after 5 minutes, but he's strong. He gives a bit back to the crowd, which I absolutely love. I mean, he's 20, he plays like a much older player. I was really impressed by him, and I can't remember, someone made a point, it's like he's in his pre-season, he got a bit of cramp at the end and then went on another 30-yard run and then got substituted. So I think it's really, really encouraging. I think I'm as positive as I've been all season, and I don't want to get carried away, but I look at that team that we put out yesterday and I'm like, that's a good team. That, you know, Jordan said for most of the season, it's a top 10 team. I can sort of believe it based on what I saw yesterday, because it's got goals in it. But before that, I've been a bit on the fence, but just really encouraging. And I know we've got tough games coming up, but, you know, it felt like we've got the sort of Leicester of old back, which is really, really exciting. So, not getting too carried away, but really, really encouraging, I felt.
Yeah, a Leicester of old, but of course there was a new feel to it, Rick, with all three January signings starting.
To throw all three in from the off was brave. I thought that Brendan might be a bit more cautious. He probably gets a bit of an unfair rep on that. You know, some of the signings that he's made over the years, they perhaps haven't been ready, but he threw them in. As Jack said, Christiansen has been... I mean, I love Tete, as you know, but Christiansen on Saturday was phenomenal, and he's just settled in, and he brings that mentality and aggression that we have been so badly lacking. And I suspect Souttar will do the same. He looks like he's a big lad and he's a winner. He obviously had a slightly harder game yesterday, but I thought nonetheless he was pretty impressive in parts. And Tete was obviously Tete. But overall, it could have been one of those games that we ought to have lost, given how we started the game, how then the own goal went in, which we're getting a bit of a flavour for, aren't we, at the minute? Wild swipes into the net. But no, we bounced back. We did everything that we've not done, coming from behind again, taking our chances. Iheanacho, you know, what did we say on the podcast last week? We were sort of mulling over whether he would now get a chance, and he did, and a goal, two assists. Having two wingers bomb on, allowing him to drop in, really worked. I can't really fault anything. And we needed that win, didn't we? Let's be honest. Yeah. Everyone around us pretty much won yesterday and today, bar perhaps Bournemouth and Southampton. But, you know, we needed that, and we've got a tough run. But, I mean, we needed it on the podcast, because I dread to think how negative we were going to get. So, and me and Jordan were serenading one another with Westlife yesterday on WhatsApp. So, you know, it's done the world of good for us. So, no, brilliant. And long may it continue.
Well, you'll get your wish, Rick, at the end of the episode. We're going to play some Westlife. You can sing out the show. How about that? But the starting song, of course, Status Quo, rocking all over the world, Tete and Iheanacho. Ian, let's talk Iheanacho, shall we? Because he's been at the club a long time, right? And I tweeted this after the game that, you know, this is a guy that has never really been first choice. And he's somebody who, without question, certainly in my mind anyway, has the ability to play Premier League football. And most other strikers or players probably would have got incredibly frustrated and wanting to leave the football club. But to me, he's always just, you know, gone about his business very respectfully. Whenever he has got an opportunity, whether it be in cup games, he's always done well. I mean, his goal scoring record in the FA Cup is pretty remarkable. And, you know, unfortunately, I think the reality is he's never really quite fitted the system that we've played. You know, and playing second fiddle to Jamie Vardy, there's no shame in that. But now, with the current system, with two wingers and the lack of form of Vardy and Daka, it's a massive opportunity, isn't it, for Kelechi Iheanacho? I'm desperate for him to take it. He's got a wonderful opportunity, and I think the biggest opportunity he's ever had in his Leicester career to be the main man, hasn't he?
He has, and I agree with you regarding there's a player in there. There's quite clearly a player in there, and we've seen, I don't think we've seen enough of it, but I also agree that I think he's a confidence player, and I think there's some players like that that need time, they need to settle, they need the shoulders to dip a little bit and to feel a bit of love. Some players don't need that. Some players can just, you can drop them in and they can crack on and pick it up. There was a lot of excitement around Kelechi Iheanacho at the time of signing. I remember in the summer I was at Ladies' Day at Leicester Racecourse, and it was all the talk of the town around that week, and people, I know one guy shouting at me, "Stringer, are we signing Iheanacho?" I've no idea, mate. I've left my crystal ball at the dry cleaners. I don't know. I've no idea. So there was a lot of talk about him, a lot of excitement about him. Jake, I'll say this. It feels as though Kelechi Iheanacho's the guy that's been trying to fit in another bloke's suit, and it just hasn't fit. And as much as you look at it and think, yeah, he'll get in that, he'll be all right, he's put it on and he's just not felt okay, because it's been Jamie Vardy's suit. Tell me a striker that's worked at the football club under Jamie Vardy, around Jamie Vardy, since Shinji Okazaki. Hasn't been one, has there? Because he is the greatest player to ever play for the football club, that ever will play for the football club. So I think playing second fiddle to that when everything was designed around him has been a real tough ask. And managers have got it wrong since before him, before Brendan Rodgers. And I think the management of Jamie Vardy is ultimately going to help Kelechi Iheanacho. But imagine being Iheanacho. I want to play, boss. Well, the greatest player to ever live still lacing his boots. You can't drop him. So I think the transition is what's interesting me, the transition of the post-Jamie Vardy life. I still don't think Kelechi Iheanacho is the long-term solution, but I think, you know, the Taylor offering to make him his own suit, to go back to that, I think is progress for him. and ultimately scored the goal that got Leicester City to the FA Cup final. So I think I'll love him forever.
Yeah. And then a word on Tete, Ian. My brother's messaged me already this evening saying, you never fall in love with loan players. And we need to remind ourselves, don't we, that at the moment, Tete is only on loan. And if he keeps performing like that every week between now and the end of the season, yeah, he probably love his time here, but there's going to be other Premier League clubs then potentially interested in him. So, you know, I'm not going to try rain on anyone's parade, etc. But if I was Leicester City, what I'd be doing right now is exploring, after just one game, honestly, I'm convinced, after one game, exploring the situation in terms of making this deal permanent as soon as possible. Because since we had Mahrez, we haven't had anyone like that, have we?
No, and one swallow doesn't make a summer and all that. So he's played well, and I'm overjoyed for the guy because I think, again, Brendan's reaction post-match tells us a lot. You know, I think he said he's a player who's been waiting for 18 months, and he's smiling and he's enthused by him, and that excites me. I love a player that's got a point to prove. I think that's what helped Leicester City win the Premier League when they did, and clearly with what's gone on with his club or going on with his club, he knows that. But they need to have already been working on this deal. And they should continue to be working on this deal. There should be two pieces of paper because I'd imagine there will be some kind of option there for them to explore now. So Jack will probably tell you more, but in the hierarchy at Leicester City Football Club, even when he signed, the day he signed, they'll be talking about, right, here's the contract. If we want to try and get it done, here's the other option if we don't, if it doesn't work. And if they need to accelerate that, then they need to accelerate that. But I think there's a much bigger risk to take than a Brazilian footballer who's got a point to prove, that's played very well in his first game and is doing very, very well. So the short answer is, yes, the deal should already be there. The paperwork should already be. I know it's complicated because of the issues with his club, but they definitely don't want to get caught out, like you say, and somebody else be watching on and go, yeah, thank you very much. You're going to go to Newcastle.
Exactly. And Jack, what I really loved about not just his performance, but everything since he signed in the few days is how much he appears to be so happy that he signed for Leicester. He looks like all his dreams have come true by playing for this football club, in contrast to Jack Harrison, where never really wanted to come, did he? You know, it was a potential pay rise. If Leeds didn't want him, probably would have reluctantly signed. We don't really want or need players like that, with all due respect to Jack. You know, obviously, if he didn't want to leave the football club, But Tete and Christiansen and probably Harry Suter as well, they look like they're really, really happy to have signed for Leicester, as opposed to, you know, just joining the football club because the opportunity was there.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the point you make is a really good one. It's nice to have footballers that want to be at the football club and are really excited about being at the football club, because I don't think we've had that for, you know, we've had a lot of players that have maybe been looking over their shoulders at other things. I mean, there's a story doing the rounds that he turned up at the training ground and just, you know, was FaceTiming his family and things like that, and absolutely loved it. I mean, he's not stopped smiling since he got here. I think he doesn't speak a word of English by all accounts, but I'm loving the interactions between him and Ricardo, who's being his translator and things like that. I think that's wonderful. I absolutely loved his celebration. I mean, you know, we talk about him being the heir to Mahrez's throne, and even celebrates like him with failed knee slides as well. So, I've never seen someone fist pump so quickly since he signed, other than Ric Flair. He looked brilliant. I mean, I turned it on midway through the first half. I have subsequently watched the rest of the first half. I turned on, he rolled his ball, rolled his foot over the ball three times and then did a step over and put a cross in on his right foot. And I was like, okay, yeah, I'm starting to believe Rick now. And, you know, just in the second half, he looked so dangerous. He looked such a threat every time he got the ball. And, you know, that my one concern for him was, can he pick up the pace of the English game? And he's not doing the Perez, I'll take five touches when one will do. He takes one and gives it. He can receive the ball with his back to goal and things like that. So, you know, as Ian says, I'm sure they have either an idea of how they can sign him or are exploring it. I imagine probably one of the things that will come down to is whether, you know, one of the things that if we get 40 points and our Premier League status is assured, then as soon as that happens, you do whatever you can to keep him if he keeps performing as he does. Because, you know, I think I haven't really talked about our January transfer business, but it was so important to get those three players in, because even now in the summer, there's still going to be a transition of about four or five players. So we've just eased the workload enormously on that. You know, Tielemans isn't going to be around. Madison's not going to stay, sadly. But, you know, if Madison does go, then it makes it even more important that Tete stays for me. And I think we're probably just going to have to enjoy the next 6 months of those two on the pitch together, because I'm not sure it's going to happen for that long, but it'll be brilliant while it lasts, I guess.
No, it will. Rick, of the quartet we haven't mentioned, I mean, you did briefly mention Barnes, but on Barnes and Madison, but then specifically Madison, you know, it was no coincidence, was it, when we were losing games after the World Cup break, Madison wasn't there. It goes without saying that he's an elite footballer, isn't he, Rick? And, you know, we do have to understand and recognise that the probability that he leaves in the summer is incredibly high. But he completely transforms Leicester, doesn't he? He's a top-class footballer.
Yeah, he's now our talisman, isn't he? He's probably taken over from Vardy in that regard. You can sort of see by, you know, his social media posts when yesterday, everything that he was posting, and all the players then are sort of following up with posts. It's like he now leads the club, I think Madison does. And he deserves to, you know, what he's done since, well, early last season. He had that rough part back end of 2021 when we won the FA Cup, where he got injured and he was sort of a shadow of his former self for a while. But he's been breathtaking for over a year now, and rightly, it sadly probably has outgrown us if we can't get back to the top eight. He does deserve to play Champions League football, or certainly European football. I would love him to stay, but, you know, I don't begrudge him if he does move on. I just hope we get that sort of money for him that we're not going to get for Tielemans, sadly, now. But he, you know, he was great again yesterday. He just gives us, I suspect, as soon as you know that he's playing, everyone else knows that their job's a little bit more easy.
Yeah. It gives everyone a lift. It does.
And I know football's all about confidence and momentum, and it's hard when you're losing games to see where you get just anything to pull yourself out. But, you know, Madison's got that confidence, and I love him. He's just, you know, his technical ability is, it's up there.
Well, that was going to be my question to you, Ian, then. You know, this technical ability being right up there.
Yeah.
Where do we put him? Because we have fortunately had some brilliant players in recent times. You know, I always say that the Riyad Mahrez is the most skillful and most talented footballer I've ever seen play for Leicester. And I thought it was incredibly unlikely that anyone would ever rival that. Now, I don't think that Madison does overtake Mahrez, but for me, I think, if my lifetime may be a bit of a stretch, I don't know. But maybe he is second to Mahrez. He's that good, isn't he?
Let me show you something, by the way. My love of Riyad.
Very nice. Which game's that from?
Honestly, I can't tell you. And because that would mean I might have to burn my books, which I wouldn't possibly want to do. But where is James Madison?
Well, yeah.
He's a different player. He's not a winger, so wingers are very different players. Riyad is the most skillful player I've ever seen play at the club. I didn't get to see Frank Worthington or Weller, two players who my dad tells me I would have enjoyed watching, because particularly Worthington for his skill. But Madison's a really different kind of player. Where would we put him in terms of skill?
I mean, yeah, in talent. I think in terms of talent. Oh. He's one of the most talented footballers I've seen he's one of the most talented footballers in the Premier League, Ian. I honestly do think he's that talented.
I think he's naturally very talented. I think the word you use, talent, Jake's a good one, because it looks like if a player was born to play football, James Madison's that player that was born to play football, wasn't he? He's a bit like Joe Cole. I always thought Joe Cole was just naturally a really talented footballer. You look at him and you think he could beat anybody in a phone box, couldn't he? Look, the ball just, like, obviously Gazza was the ultimate, wasn't he? Kind of player of that ilk.
And for James Maddison to get anywhere near that conversation, there's a few years and a few England caps that need winning between now and then. The other thing that impressed me most about James Maddison is his temperament and his temperament change and the change in who he is now as a man, as well as a footballer. I know he's had a child, and that's great. But I think he's had a lifestyle change. You know, Marcus Rashford's doing that kind of celebration, isn't he, with concentrating because of his lateness. I think James Maddison's had a similar thing, where I think he's a lot more focused on his football, focused on what he needs to do. In terms of natural talent, he would be up there. I don't know whether he's in the same conversation as Riyad, but he's definitely going to be in the top five, I reckon, that I've watched play, natural talent. But then Cambiaso would have to be in there as well for me, for the players that I've seen play in the last 15 years. Follow-up question.
Go on.
If you work in the current market, somebody comes knocking in July, August, whenever you want, whichever opens for 35 minutes, what's he worth in the current market, a fit under the contract he's under, James Maddison? Okay. What's going to cause John Rodkin and Susan Whelan and Kuntop to go, all right, let's talk?
I mean, the contract situation is ultimately the dictator here, isn't it? Because if he had 3 years left, Ian, and the way he's playing right now, and you're looking at, I know Jack Grealish would always be the one that he's compared with, but £100 million for Jack Grealish, which I thought was too much, I would say that Leicester can demand £80 million for James Maddison if he had 3 years left on his contract. Unfortunately, he doesn't, and it's pretty obvious he isn't going to sign a new contract. So Leicester then have no choice but to negotiate. It is the brutal reality. So I think if Leicester can get £60 million in the summer and can sell him to Manchester City, and so he goes off and improves as a player and plays under Pep, I think that is the best solution all round, because he plays Champions League football. He gets what he wants, which is to play under Pep Guardiola, and Leicester get compensated to a very decent fee. And I think that's the reality in terms of the best case solution, I think, personally.
I think he's only got a year left, which is a challenge. I think the advantage for us is there isn't a side in the top six or Newcastle or anywhere in Europe that wouldn't want him. So Man City will want him.
Auction house.
I think Manu will take him. I mean, Newcastle think he already plays for them. Bizarre.
European Cup this week. Really good. Yeah. They won the European Cup this week, Newcastle. I'm overjoyed for them. They've gone so long without a trophy. And this week they won the Champions League, which was great for them.
It's not just us. They're doing it to Declan Rice now as well. Strange bunch. Anyway, again, Arsenal, I could see him there. Spurs, you could see him there. Chelsea, sign anyone. And Liverpool need a midfielder. So there's going to be some interesting clubs there. I can see him going to Man City. And in a weird way, I mean, although I'm not particularly enamoured with them, he deserves to play at the very highest level for me. And he deserves to be playing for the Premier League and the Champions League. You know, Newcastle, all due respect, you know, they might get in the Champions League this year. It might be the Europa League. They're not going to be competing for the title, I don't think. So, I think he knows that. So yeah, I think he's doing everything we can ask of him as well, right? He's just getting his head down, scoring goals, not making a fuss about it. So, you know, there are ways to leave, and there's been interest before, but he's handled himself incredibly well.
It's great.
How long that lasts, and you know, because Leicester will dig their heels, and I'm sure, and make it difficult for other clubs to buy him in the summer. But I think there's a deal there to be done, and hopefully, you know, it can be done amicably between everyone. I'm sure the club is saying to him, "Give us 6 months, get us up the league, and we'll find you the right home," which is a bit upsetting, but not non-understandable, I guess, if that's even a word.
Yeah, we understand, even if it was non-understandable. Jack, you wanted to mention Harvey Barnes as well.
Yeah, did he get two assists yesterday?
Definitely his cross for Ian Acho's header, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Ian Acho got two assists, and who
it was the one for Pratt. So the one for Pratt, which I
has that gone down? Has that gone down as an assist for him?
It won't have done because it had a bit of a balloon up off one of their
but,
players.
By the by, Harvey Barnes another assist. Like, you know, I've been called some strange things on Twitter for backing him up. I wasn't quite called a weapon. I was called a weirdo who doesn't go to games. Harvey Barnes, output machine again. Like, yeah, and what, you know, that, having Tete and Maddison in the side makes him a far better threat. And people just need to get off his back because he's a really, really good player. He's one of our own. He scores goals. He assists goals. And you know, he's one of our best players. So yeah, I just wanted to get that in.
Once again, no, that was caused quite the stir, didn't it? Quite the debate that Harvey Barnes went. And in all the various WhatsApp groups I'm in, still those same conversations are happening. Unfortunately for Harvey, he just needs to keep delivering. And I hope at some point people do recognise how fortunate we are to have someone as talented as him. Boys, before we look ahead to these next three games, Spurs, Arsenal and Manchester United, shall we have a quick pause and do a game of Who Are You? Yeah? Right, perfect. Okay, let's do it.
Who is your daddy and what does he do?
Who are you?
You.
No, not me, you.
Yes, I am you.
Just answer the damn questions. Who are you?
Wait a minute. Who are you?
Right, and the trick is, Jake, to make sure that the music stops this time and doesn't go for 20 full minutes. And Ian, I saw you shaking your head there at Who Are You? Are you a willing participant or a reluctant one?
I just think it's a really good idea for a feature, and I'm interested in who you robbed it out, where you got it from. It's a really good idea. You've even named the game as I did.
Well, true story, this audio, the little music stuff there, obviously nicked it from various films. But I used to do a non-league football show on another radio station many years ago, and I used to do this exact same game with non-league footballers. So that's why I just recycled it for this one, Ian.
We weren't particularly original either, don't you worry.
No, no.
But I will steal it and rebadge it and use it as my own. I will try and take part. I enjoyed Bruno Bernard, was it the week before last, not last week?
Correct, it was.
Jarovic, has he appeared as well in the last few weeks?
He has. See, long time listener, first time caller. That's what I like, Ian.
Don't you worry.
So it is Mr. Ric Flair, I believe, who's taking on.
I was going to say about Rick, is it any coincidence that it's the first time for Rick's first sort of, you know, permanent stint on the show and the audio goes to the absolute pitch as a result of it? It's pure chaos when Rick's around.
Yeah, I was all over the place last week as well. It's better this week, but yeah. Well, and I'm 2 out of 2 on Who Are You, aren't I? So
you are.
It's probably best to let you boys have a chance today and me be the quiz master. So, right. Are you ready?
No. I think we're all ready. We are. Okay. Go on, go for it.
He signed last week from Leeds. No, not really. right. So, okay. First clue, eyes down, look in. He was born on the 24th of January, 1983 in Manchester.
Okay.
And the first club he played for was Stockport County.
Nicky Adams.
No.
Because that would make him 40.
Too young.
Yeah.
Right, so next clue, and I'll bring a bit of Leicester in here. So he played for Leicester on two separate loan spells. The back end of 2005-2006, and then again in 2006-2007.
I like this one already. Two loan spells. We can't have had many players that done two separate loan spells.
We were crap back then as well, weren't we?
And it's really the perfect era as well. Yeah. For us to know this one. This not, is our teenage years.
Not a good era for me, this.
No. Jason Jarrett?
No. Do you want another clue?
I do, yeah.
You'll be surprised to know he's a left-footed midfielder. And after Leicester, he went back to his parent club, and that didn't go too well. And then he ended up at Toronto FC for a year, and then
Hume?
No. I mean, Hume was a permanent, weren't he, and did well for us for a number of years.
It was at Toronto, That's Toronto.
Ah, yeah, because he's Canadian. Good one. Right, I have not picked. Let me think here.
Two loans.
Yeah, and ended up in Toronto.
He played his first loan. He made 10 appearances and scored one goal. And then the second loan, he only made 7 appearances, no goals. Oh God, here we go. What?
Is this Darcy come to say hello again?
Yeah.
Hi, Darcy. Welcome back on the podcast.
Right. Let me do another clue.
Left-footed midfield. Yeah. This is a terrible era for me. Come on, Jack. I can help Jack get this. Mm. I don't have any more clues. I can coach Jack to get this because it's in there. I just need to get it out. We just need to get it out. Jack, you don't know who it is.
He's current manager of Bury FC.
Richie AFC. Wellens. No, not Richie Wellens. What's... Oh, that's an awful guess. Sorry. Apologies.
Bury.
He's a Manc.
Yeah. He's about 40 years old. Left footer, midfielder.
So, 06, 07.
Oh, is it Nicky Summerby?
No. I'll give you another clue. We signed him from Sunderland on loan.
John Welsh.
Nearly. Someone Welsh.
Andy Welsh.
Correct.
No idea. John Welsh is another midfielder, isn't he?
My final clue.
Do I win that?
Yeah, you have. Really, yeah. I've put it on the line for and you've tapped it in. Yeah.
Yeah,
I was getting the final clue I was going to give was he was born in England, he played for Scotland, but his surname is another of the home nations.
Jack, you had it as well, did you not?
Sorry,
did you have a who are you as well?
I did, yeah. Do you want me to do it?
Well, I'm just interested.
I've got 3 weeks in Australia, so I'll do one next week.
Okay.
Who's on that? Yeah. I'm on next week then anyway, so right, okay.
Kevin Paul.
I'm sorry?
I'm just getting guesses in. Kevin Paul.
It's not Kevin Paul, no. It's not Kevin Paul.
But it's no, it's winner stays on, so you stay on, Jack, and I go on to Quizmaster. I don't know why each week we're still unclear of what our own rules are and we do this
I'm
every week.
I'm not really sure we've established any rules because I wouldn't say there's a precedent for that. I'd say we just make it up as we go along.
Right.
Because otherwise Jordan would never have a go. Evening, Jordan, if you're listening.
And I'm annoyed. John Welsh was from Liverpool, was a midfielder, played for Tranmere.
Andy Welsh. Andy Welsh stopped me in the street.
He was a left winger and I think he played under Rob Kelly.
Yeah.
And I remember him being quite slow for a winger.
Yeah.
Which was a challenge.
I think he ended up at Yeovil as well, either after as well, significant. Yeah. So I do remember him. Yeah. And I remember him being incredibly average.
Sunderland were his parent club.
Yeah. 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 That's when I got it.
There's not much to say about him other than that, really, because he had a complete nondescript Leicester career, really.
I don't care, not even any anecdotes
I can throw in about him.
No, but that was the era, wasn't it? We had hundreds of players just like that for a good few years. That's just how it was at the time, wasn't it? Right, okay. So lads, look ahead to those upcoming games. We mentioned actually before we started recording that winning against Villa was massively important anyway, because we hadn't won a game post World Cup in the league anyway. But also loads of teams down there in the Premier League table picked up points this weekend, and it's so tight, isn't it? I think seven or eight teams. But also, Ian, because we're now going to a run of three games of Spurs, Arsenal and Man United. So yeah, momentum is obviously something. But yeah, if we hadn't beat Aston Villa at the weekend, we may well have been in the relegation places or incredibly close to it. So that was massive, wasn't it, for so many reasons.
Yeah, it was, and they did win. So that's that glass is certainly half full, and an opportunity for them to use that momentum and move on. It depends how you look at the difficult games, doesn't it? Like Dyche and Everton were looking at Arsenal at the weekend, thinking, "Oh no, Everton fans, harbingers of doom." Oh no, gonna lose, and they've nicked a win. So Spurs have beaten Manchester City over the course of the weekend. I know that's not as much of a a giant killing, but these teams are beatable. They are, on as long as tactically the team is set up. I just hope that the Foxes have got the leaders to pick up from where they left off, and take games to Spurs. That's the difference, isn't it? Taking the game to them, being fearless, that old hashtag fearless thing coming back. But they're formidable teams. Leicester are, but have signed good players. I agree with what was said right at the top of the programme, that these three signings in particular were vital. Honestly, think without them, the club were in all sorts of trouble. I really do. And they all look good quality players. I think Suter's not been spoken about on the show so far. I think, you know, he might look like a B-Tech Harry Maguire, but I think he's a good player, solid player. Keep him fit. I think that's the problem, coming back from a lengthy injury. Keep him fit, and I think he could be a good signing for the football club. And the good thing this week, Jake, is that they're looking forward to Spurs. They're looking forward to Arsenal and Man United because they've got a win, and they've got some fresh blood in, and that will have lifted everybody, and it will have lifted Brendan. That's what a lot of people will forget. Brendan's been looking over his shoulder for signings. He's not handled a lot of it particularly brilliantly, but he's been the only person to speak, and he's been frustrated, and that's all very, very clear. But he's got what he needed, what he wanted, and that's fresh blood. And he's used it, and you guys were right. He had the confidence in his conviction to start the players. Keep going. You know, when you're chip leader in poker, don't be a shrinking violet. Keep going, keep pressing, keep pressing, keep pressing, and press home that advantage. And I don't know, those three games, what you taking? Four points?
I would absolutely take four. I would take four. I mean, Jack, I'm thinking about this Spurs game, and you know, Ian is right that they will now be looking forward to this game. I'm now just less fearful than what I ordinarily am when we play Spurs, because I can't remember the last time we had a normal game against them. It always feels like, Jack, that there's some kind of drama or story, or I don't know, when we play Spurs, somebody may pull out and point out a fixture I can't remember, but it always tends to be some kind of story at the end of it, which usually doesn't end positively for us.
You say that. I don't know whether it's just because we've won, but there are two games that have kind of stuck in my head. One is that I think the first game we played against Spurs under Brendan, Maddison scored a 30-yarder and Ricardo scored, and we came back from 1-0 down, almost 2-0 down, because there was a Sergio Rio did a stupid dance when he thought he'd scored, and then VAR disallowed it, which is one of the great VAR moments, if there is such a thing. And then we also we beat them at their place during COVID. I think Maddison scored, and I think Vardy scored a penalty again, VAR just before half time. So
actually, it was at half time.
Yeah, it was. They'd almost gone off, right? And then exactly. So they're tough games, but we are due a result against one of the big six, because we've not got any points off them in a long time. Spurs is at home. Spurs, I looked at that, you know, they've beaten Man City, and I think they've won a few, but, you know, they're only a few games ago from, you know, Conte's leaving and he's sulking because he's not got the players he needs. So they seem like a club that's constantly on the cusp, but Arsenal have just lost. You know, I don't think the season is going to play out in the second half like it did in the first half. I think there are going to be, you know, sides that go out of form as well as sides that come into form. So, whether it's, you know, punch drunk because we've won a game, but I think there's opportunities to pick up points. And I think I said this before we went live. I think some of them just don't lose. Just pick up a point. We've drawn three games all season and we've lost 12, I think. We've lost far too many games, so we need to find ways of not losing games now. So, beat Spurs, pick up a point against Man U, pick up a point against Arsenal. I'm looking at that team, and I think, you know, the team we had out can challenge everyone. And also, Sumari is back this week, Evans is back this week, and he probably won't play either of them, which, you know, we were talking about a lack of strength and depth a few weeks ago. All of a sudden, you know, you've got a few options on the bench. Hopefully Ricardo's back soon too. And you've got some serious options. Who knows? But I think, Ian, I'd snap your hand off for 4 points. So I would definitely take that. But yeah, hopefully we can go and have a right go.
Yeah, and I've said it many times before, you know, Leicester under Brendan Rodgers, we're streaky. You know, we go through terrible spells, we go through great spells. Just hopefully we're about to embark on one of the much better runs, and it would be ideal against these three teams we have got coming up. Rick and Darcy, a question for you, which is slightly non-Leicester related. Because obviously we're playing Spurs up next. They're currently fifth, I believe. I don't think they've jumped above Newcastle, have they? So the way the league's looked at the moment, Rick, we've got what probably Arsenal and Man City batting out for the title. Man United are probably third. And then we've got Spurs and Newcastle. Probably that's the battle for fourth, isn't it? There's been so much hype and talk around Newcastle. And, you know, I won't lie, I'm struggling to buy into the fairy tale. I really am. Do you want Newcastle to finish fourth, or would you rather it be Spurs, genuinely? Not that bothered.
I mean, it's nice to see teams disrupt the traditional six, but I don't know. It's and they're quite a nice bunch, aren't they? The Geordies, in a way. I mean, and they've been through hell with Mike Ashley, but also they're pissing me off. Excuse me, language. They are, you know, they're long suffering, but the way that they're courting Madison, the way that they're behaving. I listen to Talk Sport, I listen to various things, and they're all on there saying that they're going to win the league. And I know we've got, I mean, I've probably said muck like that in the past when we were doing well. But, I mean, if they get there and they've averaged 2 points a game, which I think is what's going to need to happen, then fair play to them, because we fell shy, didn't we, under Brendan a couple of times where we looked like we were going to average 2 points a game. And we got sort of 65, 69 or whatever and finished fifth. If they do that, if they get, you know, in the mid-70s, fair play to them. I mean, I don't want Spurs to get fourth either. You're asking me whether I want to have a mug of sick or something equally as unsavoury, I think, there. But one thing I will say about Newcastle, though, you know, they're under this very, very wealthy ownership, the most wealthiest in the world. And they have spent money. But to be fair, what Eddie Howe's done, you know, he's turning the likes of Joe Linton and Dan Burn into elite footballers. And, you know, Joe Willock and Almiron are all playing very, very well. So in some ways, fair play to them, because, you know, they will spend a lot more money than they have done. And I'm sure they'll do well. But so, yeah, I don't know. I had to answer that, Jake, if I'm honest.
Who signed Almiron? Who was owner of the club when Almiron signed?
It was Ashley.
Ashley, yeah.
But that's why Benitez left, wasn't it? Because
I think Mike Ashley has a bad rap, and I know I'm going to get slaughtered for it, but...
Pin this clip. We've got to clip this and put this on Twitter.
Whoa, Ian.
Hashtag NUFC.
Mike Ashley kept them in the Premier League, right, when he could have pulled the plug and just sent them into financial doom. He sorted them out with an owner that is pretty much Saudi Arabia. So they're owned by one of the wealthiest Middle Eastern states going. They've got liquid gold coming out of the dressing room. So
in Joe Linton,
his people brokered a pretty decent deal to sell the club onto. He pumped a few quid in, maybe not as much as all the Newcastle fans wanted and wanted more and think that they deserved more.
And he got 30 million for Iosi Perez. Probably the best piece of business.
He must have been a genius, but I don't know, like, he gets hammered. But I think just keeping them in the division when they were that poor, and I know the argument is he installed the managers that were that poor, and Benitez was clearly an error, but it was an ego signing as a manager, but kept him in the league, sold him to a decent owner that's got loads of money that maybe shouldn't be owning the club if you listen to some quarters. And he signed Joe Linton, he signed Almiron, didn't he? He signed some decent players. Mike Ashley's given an unfair bad rap.
He did give Pardew a 7-year contract. So
it was 8, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, something obscene. But
he didn't appoint Joe Kinnear as well, did he? Or was that pre-Mike Ashley? Because that was sensational.
Have you ever heard that press conference of Joe Kinnear? He goes, oh, yeah, that is amazing.
I think that was Ashley as well, wasn't it? I think
was it?
Was. Yeah.
Inspired. He was setting them up for all of the success by managing expectations and keeping them down. I don't feel particularly. The Newcastle thing, I just think everyone's getting really, really excited. Heard Danny Mills the other day start to liken it to Leicester winning the Premier League in 2016. What Newcastle have done this season is likeable to what Leicester did in 2016.
People are saying that about Arsenal as well, but people are saying, Arsenal being incredibly achievement. It's like they spent 300 million quid.
I think we could do a whole show on Danny Mills, to be honest, because he absolutely detests Leicester. When we won the league, he didn't have a good word to say about us. I don't know whether we've done something wrong to him.
He got sent off.
Well, there's a very limited footballer who maximised his potential. You think he would have seen some sort of recognised what we did, but no.
Yeah. There's a real theme with bald men named Danny that don't like us, because Danny Murphy doesn't like us afterwards. So if anyone knows a bald man named Danny that likes Leicester City, please let us know.
Well, why don't you go... You're in Australia. Why don't you go and try and find Danny Teato?
That's what I was going to say. Yeah.
He'll be out there somewhere.
Right. Let's move on from Newcastle and bold Danny's. Last week, Ian, we were chatting about the midfield conundrum. Right. What's our best three? And we went with the three on Saturday, which we wanted to see. Dewsbury Hall, Tielemans and Maddison. Now, of course, you've got a winger, which means that we can put Maddison back centrally. But of course, that means there's not a natural holder or sitter. I think we got away with it a little bit on Saturday, because it was like a basketball game, wasn't it, at times? It was end-to-end, and you can't help but feel some protection at times would be quite nice. And asking, you know, Yuri just to sit in a little bit, I think you can do that, but ultimately it's not really his strength. I want Kiernan to remain in the side. I think his energy is so vitally important, and it goes without saying that the Maddison is one of the, well, if not the first name on the team sheet. But we've just won 4-2 against Aston Villa. Do you keep that same trio against the likes of Spurs, Arsenal and Manchester United, or do you look at it and thinking, well, we're probably going to need some sort of protection here at some point? For me, Ian, I would be really hesitant to go without a natural sitter against one of those three. I just think we're just slightly too open, and you can get away with it against Aston Villa, but probably not against those three.
I've always been of the opinion that I think if you've won a game away from home 4-2, or you've won a game and you then miss out, I always worry about what that says to the rest of the dressing room regarding your place. You know, you've played really, really well. Who are you going to drag? Kiernan and Dewsbury Hall out of the team. You're not going to drag Yuri because he's the best player other than Maddison in the team. I hope we can all agree. Clearly, you're not going to drag Maddison out of the team. So,
Ian, I would drop Yuri. I would.
No, I think I could watch Yuri Tielemans play football all day. I think he is so gifted. I think we were talking about naturally born footballers earlier in James Maddison, the other end of the field. I think Yuri gets as much out of his engine as he can. I think his work rate's outstanding. For me, it'd be Maddison, and then Tielemans would be the next name on my team sheet. I think he's outstanding. I think he should play every game and twice in the same game if that can be possible.
Are you dropping for Jake?
Well, that's the difficult thing, isn't it? Because that's the problem. That's the problem. So this is why I think it is a bit of a conundrum, because I do think that if you are playing against those three, I do think you need a natural sitter. And right now, Mendy is probably the one, but I've never been completely sold on Mendy. I think he's a nice footballer.
You're dropping Yuri Tielemans for Papi Mendy.
No, I'm not saying that.
Mate, your head against that wall by times. What you've just said.
No, I think it's a conversation to be had. And for me, as much as I like and agree in terms of Yuri's talent, there are times when, say, even at the weekend, I thought that he goes a long time where I just don't really... When we haven't got the ball, he can be a bit of a passenger.
As close to a leader as they've got when they've got Evans, who leads, certainly leads by example. Vardy... was an on-the-pitch leader. Obviously, Kasper Schmeichel having lost a leader. That's down the spine of the team, by the way, I remind you. And Jurri's the closest to a leader that they've got.
But he is leaving.
So that means you drop him.
Don't get me wrong. I think Tielemans is our second best player, like you, Ian. But I do worry we'll start the game against Spurs, and then after 20 minutes, we'll be saying, why haven't we got a sitting central midfielder in there? We're getting overrun. And then what do you do?
Yeah.
No, if you drag him and you put Papi Mendy in and they're losing.
No, not Mendy. You can't put Mendy in.
Going for you, going, what are you dropping Jurri for? You've lost 4-0 and you've dropped one of your best centrally based players. He would get battered by if he did.
You're right. I think, well, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. I think with 1-4-2, you're right. I'm torn. I think you can't drop Dewsbury all. You can't drop Dewsbury all, though, with his pressing.
Can drop Jurri. You just can't drop him for Mendy.
This is the problem. We wouldn't even be having this debate, though, Jack, if Wilf's form hasn't been as bad as what it is. Because
I know I'm about the only person that thinks this, but Samori plays quite well against pressing teams, and he carries the ball. And actually, if you're, I know we signed Christensen and I know we signed Suter now. You do need a little bit. You need a bit more physicality in the side. He does give us some of that. So. Based on what I've seen this season, if you're dropping him for anyone, it'd be Sumare for me.
Mm. And Jack Harrison, by the way, what were they after in Jack Harrison that they wanted to get through the door that they will now be missing?
I think they wanted another winger because at the moment, if Tete or Barnes gets injured, I mean, Harrison can play both sides.
Yeah.
They haven't got another player. And you know, Barnes, whilst he has, you know, he is an output machine, he doesn't necessarily play well always in games, and Harrison might be a bit more of a steady option. I think he's probably better defensively than Harvey as well. Yeah. So with 20 minutes to go, you might bring him on to close out a game and give you some energy, runs all day. So I can see why they would want him. And to be honest, I'm slightly annoyed we didn't sign him still, because it doesn't surprise me, Rick. I do think we need another winger in the side, just so, because, you know, it's great if Barnes and Tete are fit, but what do we do if one of them is injured? Stick Maddison out there, play Pratt. He's not really a winger. It does create us a bit of a challenge.
Jake, apologies. I moved you from central midfielder to winger. Apologies, but I'd start the same. Your question. I'd start the same lads because I think he gets battered if he doesn't.
But
he's breaking his door down to unseat. I think Dewsbury Hall's a great talent. His energy, but it was responsible for one of the goals at the weekend, wasn't it?
I think he will start with it as well.
In many ways, it was a hypothetical question, but I do think, you know, bigger picture stuff, if we can sit here and say it's great to have that three, I do think also we do need to recognise that there's not a natural sitter there. And whether it's Dewsbury Hall or Tielemans, you are going to compromise one of them. You're going to have to make sure there is somebody there, you know, with some kind of presence, you know, just holding back just a little bit. Jack, there's been lots of shaking of the head throughout that midfield debate and conversation. I'm not sure if you're just squinting from the Australian sunlight or you just look really angry at what I'm saying.
The sun has come out just to the left of me and it is right in my eyes. And I haven't got my sunglasses. So, and I'm not putting that silly hat on again. So that might be why. Do you know what, though? I'll stop shaking my head and say, isn't it nice to be having a genuine debate about selection? Because we've not had one of those. So there's a few, like Evans is fit. Who does he come in for?
He doesn't.
When he's back? Well, he probably doesn't, right? But he's club captain. And you go, does he play into the Fez? I'm a big fan of the suit. You can't buy any Leicester shirts in Australia currently. I've told the club to go and work on that because I think there's a big market out there for that. But you know, I think he's impressive. Ricardo comes back in. I thought Castagne was bang. I'm a big Timmy fan, but I thought he was really average on Saturday. I think you know, there's a, you know, wouldn't it be exciting to see Ricardo lined up next to Tete going forward? I think there's some real excitement there. So, you know, in lots of places, and you know, in I know you're not the biggest fan of Daka, but you know, there's still Vardy and Daka around as well as Iheanacho. So there are some competition for places. I mean, we're not. I think, you know, we're looking like a, you know, I look at the side on paper again, and it all of a sudden looks a lot better. I'm still Danny Ward still concerns me a little bit. He did fall over like a sack of spuds for the Suter goal. I'm not quite sure how he can do that in such slow motion. I'm not frowning too much. I'm only teasing you, Jake. But it is nice to be having, you know, these debates. And I think Brendan always says this: it's not just about the 11 that starts the game; it's about the 11 that finishes it. And having, you know, if we play Yuri, KDH and Madison, you've still got Sumari and Didi out that you can bring on to close out a game as well. So it gives you options to change it, particularly now with five subs, which we don't seem to be able to utilise that. And it actually brings me, I wasn't going to say this, but, you know, Brendan was getting a bit of a stick for the three subs he brought on, but I actually thought he helped close out the game. I mean, Pratt scores, doesn't he? And Mendy sort of, you know, does what he always does, which is just get the ball and pass the ball. But that's what we needed at that stage in time. So it's not just about the players that start, but it's nice to be having a debate about who starts and who doesn't, because we've not really been able to have that all year.
No, you are definitely right with that. We'll not disagree with it. Lads, I think we're at the stage of the episode where it's kind of any other business. We've still got a poem from Ric Flair to do and some Westlife, believe it or not. Two of the things I didn't really expect to be saying on the podcast. But is there anything in particular burning inside which any one of you three would like to bring up before we do that? No?
Can I give you one little Brendan Rodgers-based anecdote? And I've not had the ability to be on too many airwaves, thankfully, for many people, in a while. I know Brendan Rodgers isn't paid to be a good bloke, right? But we hear enough stories of where footballing fraternity players and management aren't necessarily characteristic. I just wanted to let you know that, and he's paid to win games of football, but I spent some time off the air and away from reporting for a while, for various different reasons that will remain private for now, but they then caused me to have some time away and not be particularly well. Anyway, I was sat actually taking my son to a medical appointment about 2 or 3 weeks in, and the phone rings, and I didn't take it because I was waiting to take my son in for his appointment, and the person left a voicemail, and it was Brendan. And he said that he'd been speaking with Birch, and Birch had given him a flavour as to what's going on, and he was concerned and he wanted to give me a call and he wanted to reach out. And he left me his number. He said, call me back, you know, during the day I'm going to be training the boys, but give me a call back and I'll call you back. And he called me back that night, and he spent half an hour on the phone to me, listening, giving advice, being genuinely sympathetic and understanding, and really tried to kind of pick me up. Now, he delivered me as a boy the gift that I always wanted as a Leicester fan, and that was the FA Cup. Never thought the league was achievable because I support Leicester City. So I'll love him forever for that. But that phone call and that contact, he didn't need to do that. And Brendan's not here to win hearts and minds. He's not here to win mates. That's not his job. His job's to win games of football and develop players. Fine. He knows that, and I know that, and everyone knows that. But he didn't need to do that. And he did it because he used to see me twice a week, and you get that kind of relationship. And I give him stick when things were bad, and he knew that, and he knew the game, and he knows the game. But I just wanted a doth of the cap that actually, behind the guy that you see in the dugout every week and here in a press conference, there's a good bloke, and he is a good bloke. And he won't hear this. No chance. But to Brendan Rodgers for that phone call and that half an hour and for showing that he cares, thank you.
Lovely story. No, that's great. And I think it's one of them things that needs to be said as well sometimes, because, you know, people do forget that. So really, really nice. And Ian, Brendan 100% listens to the Big Strong Leicester Boys podcast.
So, I hope he doesn't, Jake. Yeah. Never speak to any of us.
No. Well, I think he is listening, and that's why Ian Atcho started, because he's been listening to me slam Dakar every week. Right. Ric Flair. You have, I believe, written a poem or some words about Tete. Is this correct?
I have. I don't need to say too much about his performance yesterday, but yeah, I've written a few words about him. It's called The Ode to Tete, right? There was a young Brazilian called Tete who came to play down the city. His first touch is as soft as a pair of silk kegs and a beans and little sausages baked from Greg's. Even Brendan stopped moaning about things. Look at what he did to poor Tyrone Mings. I keep sending him messages on Insta, but he hasn't replied. I can only presume that his phone must have died. He has single-handedly saved our season, and if we don't sign him on a permanent, then I want Rudkin done for treason. Up the city.
Rick, I absolutely loved every single moment of that. That was beautiful. Out of curiosity, how long did that take you to write?
Oh, a couple of minutes. I saw Ian hiding in his hoodie there. That was very offensive, Ian.
No, he was crying just because it was that beautiful, and he just didn't want you to see that. That's what it was.
Rick, that was sensational. Like, I don't know where you come up with this stuff, but it's outrageous.
It was horrible. Baker.
When you're reading bedtime stories to your two little nippers, I mean, do you read like poems like that to them?
So, honestly, I swear on my life, last night for a laugh, I did decide to read Darcy a story. Well, not that I was reading her story, and then after that, she still wouldn't go to sleep. So I did see if she was interested in a story about a Brazilian superhero called Tete, but
no,
she weren't bothered either. Went down about as well as my poem.
Well, I thought it was beautiful. Right, chaps, that is the end of today's podcast. Ian, once again, thank you for joining us. I think I speak for both the chaps here and everyone listening. Great to hear that you're back well again, you know, and you're back on the airways. Hopefully we see and hear a lot more of you, because it's been too long. And you're a proper Leicester man, proper Leicester fan. And yeah, I think we're all dead happy to have you about, mate.
Appreciate that. And good on you for launching a podcast that's got genuine Leicester fans on it, that talks about current affairs and doesn't spend 47 minutes talking about a right back's right foot and the positioning of it. So no, good on you. It's good, solid Leicester City chat. I love it with crap Leicester market based accent poems as well. I am back in.
And it's all about to get that a little bit weirder. Rick, I've got you some Westlife. This is after you and Jordan.
This is for Jordan.
Yeah. Well, you both joined in. I was opening the WhatsApp group on Saturday.
Hey, have you explained why Jordan isn't here, just so people think he hasn't been ousted for Rick? Or have I missed that?
No, I didn't. No,
he needs a week for it to... Was that it? That was it, wasn't it?
He's out. I can't remember. He's in Seville, isn't he? Bilbao falling off scooters.
Yeah, he's on a stag doing Bilbao. So Jordan will be back next week. He hasn't been dropped. But I did have to listen to minute-long voice notes from both him and Rick singing Westlife on Saturday. So I think we can only really then finish the show this evening with Westlife. Rick, hopefully you like this one. This is Westlife, World of Your Own. Feel free to sing along. You make me feel funny. When you come around, yeah, that's what I found out, honey. What am I doing without you? You make me feel happy. When I leave you behind, it plays my mind now, honey. What am I doing without you? Oh, took for granted everything we had. As if I find someone who's just like you. Sports Social Podcast Network.